Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Brad Gilmore Show on Demand. We are here on the day of the day before Election Day. And I thought that I would play this interview today. I talked to Larry Wilmore, who is the host of Wilmore, a talk show over there on the Peacock Network. You might recognize Larry from The Ringer, his podcast over there on The Ringer, Black on the Air. He was also the host of The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore that took the place of The Colbert Report over on Comedy Central back in the day. And he's been around a lot. And he also hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner a few years back with Barack Obama, President Barack Obama. I had him on the show, and I thought that today would be an appropriate time to do so. I do want to do this, though, with this disclaimer, is I am not a politically motivated person. Although I am fascinated by politics, I am very in the middle on pretty much everything. I'm an independent. I know people hate when people say that, but I really am. I've never felt like I was one side or the other. I kind of remain in the middle. I have my things that I feel strongly about. Absolutely, I don't want to get it twisted. I'm very, like many Americans, you know, socially liberal, fiscally conservative. I think most people are that way. Less taxes, but more individual liberties for every citizen, in the United States. I think we should all have the same rights. I think that that's a safe bet that most of you listening to this, feel that way as well. So, I talked to Larry, and we talk about politics, but I promise you, I just asked him things that I am very curious about. We don't go into policy, and we don't go to anything. Obviously, Larry is a little bit left leaning. Right. Or at least if he's not, he has some disdain for the current incumbent in the White House. But nevertheless, I just ask him interesting questions, and I ask him questions about his feelings on where we are and where we're going to go. And I really enjoyed this talk with Larry. Initially, I was going to only talk sports with him, so I told him I'd have him back and we'll talk sports eventually, maybe after the election. But I felt like the election was such a pressing matter, and he is a very, very intelligent man. Wherever you fall on the political spectrum, I think that he is very intelligent. So I was excited to talk to him and talk about his new show, Wilmore, streaming exclusively on the Peacock Network. So with all those disclaimers aside, here's my conversation with the very funny and brilliant Larry Wilmore. And I had to ask him about hosting the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And he actually told me something that he has never told anyone before. So check this out. My conversation with the one and only Larry Wilmore.
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?
And he joins me now, Larry Wilmore, the host of the new show, Wilmore, on the Peacock Network. How you doing, man?
Good to see you. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to you. We were talking a little bit before. I've always been a fan of your viewpoint, your voice, and your flair for the comedicness of our everyday political life.
It's not easy.
Yeah. We got to laugh to keep from crying at times. How have you been doing, though, overall with the new show? Yeah. And how's Peacock been? Because, you know, I've talked to a couple people. Michael Hawley was on the show recently, and we were talking about his new show. Yeah. Over there, and it's really, I think, taken off well because there's a lot of really different programming.
Yeah,
streaming service.
Well, Peacock, not to do a commercial, but this is what I really believe, and I'll use another platform too. I'll say Hulu. I think Peacock and Hulu are kind of, I think, where television is going, where there's a combination of live things that are happening on the platform, and then classic libraries, and then their own original content. You know, so people have a variety of ways to interact, and because there's live content and content that's going on, whether it's news or, you know, things are up to the minute, both of those platforms. I think that's where television is going pretty much. I think you'll see Netflix and Amazon do more of that kind of stuff. Well, Amazon shows football games now, which I think is a great idea, Amazon Prime, you know, to get people to that platform. So it's been cool because it's different than what you're used to with the network environment and all that. You're not on at a certain time, so that's always kind of weird. Like people say, when's the show on? I'm like, whenever you want to watch it, just download it. You know?
It's hard for us to get out of that linear mode, right? Especially with late-night TV, because late-night television was always big on who's on at 11:35.
Right.
You know, who's on at 12:35. What are those shows on? Is it Conan? Is it the, you know, whatever?
Exactly.
So I think it's hard to get off that linear model of television as a viewer. But I think that Peacock, like I said, has been doing a lot of interesting things. For you, why was this the right place to go to? I mean, you talk about Hulu, and there's all kinds of streaming services looking for content. Why was Peacock the right one?
Well, I was already at NBC Universal, where my company is, because, you know, I'm involved a lot in developing TV shows and that kind of thing. It was kind of what I was doing before I even did the nightly show, developing shows and creating shows. And so that's where I was. And I was in a conversation with Dan Cher, who's the head of Peacock. They were doing some things because of COVID, and I was helping out this little talent show type thing. It was a lot of fun. But after George Floyd, I have to tell you, like, we were having conversations, man, I feel like we need to respond to this type of thing. And Dan was talking to me about it, said, would you want to do something on Peacock maybe? And that's how our discussions first started. It came in the wake of, you know, this past summer when all these things were happening. And I have a podcast, you know, and I was doing it, but it felt like it might be interesting to come back to television in a way and interact with the audience. So that's kind of how it started. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think George Floyd shifted a lot of things. Yeah. In the
for
country,
sure.
And you know, I'm in Houston, Texas right now, which was George Floyd's home, and and you know, to see the response here, which was, I will say, 99% of people here really resonated with what happened, and I felt like a collective cohesion, especially in a state like Texas, where that might not be the most expected thing in the world. But Houston, Houston's very diverse, and you know, I went to a couple of the rallies and just walked around and wanted to listen to voices, and it was the first time that something felt different. Did you think it felt different?
I think so. And just to give Houston a shout out, I've spent a lot of time in Houston in my early stand-up days. You know, there's a Laugh Stop there, and I love Houston, man. Houston's always been a diverse city. The Montrose district was always, like, you know, that emerging gay district that was kind of verboten in the 80s, and they were proudly kind of wearing that on their sleeves. People talk about Dallas, but I'm like, yo, man, Houston is, there's a lot going on there, you know? And so that I'm not surprised by that at all, you know, but it definitely felt different, you know? I had never seen, as you point out, that as an example, the country kind of focused on that at the same time. And then it became global. I mean, white people in Denmark are marching, you know, having Black Lives Matter. You know? I'm like, what's going on, you know?
Do you think that people understood the movement more afterward? People maybe who were against it prior said, wait, okay, hold on now. Okay, maybe I misunderstood the message initially, but now I'm kind of understanding the side of the movement.
Yeah, I think so, because I've always said there are two aspects of it. There's the Black Lives Matter slogan, which is a cry to call attention to a lot of these things that are happening that maybe people weren't paying attention to. And cell phones and video have kind of forced people to pay attention to that, or allow people to. But then there's also the Black Lives Matter political organization, which I feel those aren't necessarily the same things, you know. Like, I feel people can support the cry without necessarily having to be in line with all the aims of the organization, because that's a separate thing in my mind. You know, they may view it as the same, but to me, I think it's different. You know, I think it's good to have people rallying around something without having to commit to necessarily someone's idea of how to fix something. I think we can have those conversations, you know, separately and agree on certain things, you know.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think that it's a lot of times it's all in the messaging and the marketing sometimes, right?
Exactly.
And it gets very easily mixed up when especially during election seasons and whatnot. I was watching some of your show, and you said something that I tend to agree with. You said that debates are kind of this old diplomatic thing that we did from yesteryear. And
From
the before time, that's what you said. Yes, from the before time. And I think that you're right. The debate, even the other night with the vice presidential debate, all the policy that really was discussed wasn't discussed the following day. Everyone was focused on the fly on the vice president's head, right?
Exactly, yes.
And then the debate prior, it was more of who had the best zinger. And I think that this is something that the current president kind of, he was the one who changed, in my opinion, how debates really became with the Republican primary debates. Do you think now with this virtual one that's been canceled, it seems like Vice President Biden's going to be doing a town hall. Are we going to eventually get to a point to where the Lincoln-Douglas style debate is 100% out the window? We're not even thinking about this anymore?
By the way, are you sure this isn't a political show and not a sports show? I'm like, these are the smartest questions of these things. You are absolutely 1,000% right. You know, Trump blew it up a long time ago. He didn't blow it up in this past one because it upset everyone's expectations about how you go about getting your political message out. He did it by this scorched earth policy. Remember, he was a Republican who came out of the gates saying that John McCain wasn't a war hero. That would have disqualified him in any other race, but it didn't. His numbers stayed the same or went up, you know? And in that first debate, when he called Rosie O'Donnell a pig and Megyn Kelly had blood coming out of her, whatever, you know, all those right. things would have seemed so crass, especially on the Republican side. It would have disqualified anyone. So there was something else going on with Trump. His style over substance has become the Brett Norah of the whole party now, you know, and this whole, and now it's taken over everything. You're right. You can't even, it's impossible to even think of how civil Romney and Obama were just a few years ago. It seems like light years ago, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely isn't the same. Trump really came at it like a battle rapper, right?
Oh, he
came
absolutely. At it like it was completely
Jay-Z and Nas.
Battle rap.
Yeah.
It was completely battle rap. You're absolutely right. You
What's
know?
The most disrespectful thing I can say? Because it's going to get the biggest reaction and everyone's going to be
exactly.
talking about it. Yeah.
I'm here to diss you, not to disagree with you, just to diss. He leaves the agree part he cuts off. It's just diss.
Okay, so you did something that I loved. So earlier this year I released my first book. And it was about
congratulations.
Thank you. It was about the movie Back to the Future. So it wasn't
I love
a
that
huge
poster. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. This is a That's poster awesome. For the book. This is the book itself. I can send you one.
It's I
called
love
Back
to.
From
please,
the Future.
Please sign it for me. Yeah.
I will. I'll send you one. But okay, so when I agreed to do it, it was something that I really wanted to do. Then I had that internal doubt of, wait, what did I just agree to? This is going to be a mammoth project to take on. For you, when you agreed to do the White House Correspondents' Dinner, to me, that's something that I've always loved. I go back and I'll watch them intermittently. I even saw one recently when Bush had his had a guy impersonating him, doing his actual internal monologue. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but it was funny. It was really funny. And it was a time for everyone.
He was very talented, yeah.
He was great. He was great. Now, when you agreed to it, obviously, I'm sure as a comedian, you said, this is something that every comedian dreams about. Other than hosting The Tonight Show, this might be number two on the list, or hosting Saturday Night Live, right? And then you get it. Was there that immediate sense of, what did I just agree to?
At all of it. Absolutely. In fact, as you're about to do it, you're thinking that, you know, here I am sitting next to the First Lady, I'm having dinner, and I'm like, oh shit, I'm about to throw some truth bombs in here. like all of this nicety of, yeah, that's great. And your kids are going to think, oh, that's great. You know, President Obama was dropping bombs. Fuck Wolf Blitzer, you know. I'm going, but thanks, my nigga, you know, all this stuff. I'm like, oh, shoot, what am I going to do, you know? So there was a tremendous amount of pressure. You're absolutely right. I was looking forward to it. And in fact, it was something that I really wanted to do. So when it happened, I couldn't believe that it did, you know, but you're right. Then as soon as I got it, I'm like, why did I agree to do this? You know, what was I thinking? This is not a good idea, Larry.
Did you have that out of body experience as you're looking at
completely.
The president and say, what
Absolutely.
Am I doing?
Okay. I've never told anyone this. So this is a scoop. And I wonder if I should say it. Okay. The weirdest thoughts go through your head when you're up there, you know, because think about it. I'm this close to the president, right? And I go, oh, fuck, I'm this, sorry, I don't know if I can.
No, you're fine, you're fine.
But I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm this close to the president. What if I was crazy and I just wanted to attack him? I'm like, Larry, stop thinking that. What's wrong with you? You know, you can't think that. And then my other side's going, I know, but I mean, could they stop me in time? I said, yes, mother, stop thinking like that. Yes, they can stop you. Why are you even having these thoughts? And my mind's going, I'm just saying how close I am. It's just bizarre. Who's been this close to this leader? So all kinds, this is just to say how crazy your brain gets when you're thinking of that stuff. You know, it's so bizarre.
Did you have your inner circle of people who you were bouncing the jokes off of?
And yeah, definitely.
Was there one to where, you know, whether it was saying the N-word in front of the President of the United States of America, or was there anything in particular, or the dropping bombs from long distance like Steph Curry or whatever the joke was? Was there anyone that just didn't play in the room that you said, you know what, though, I'm still sticking to my guts. I know y'all are saying don't do this joke. I'm still going with it.
It was kind of the opposite. I came up with the N-word thing very early because I wanted to make the point of how the world has changed, you know, how – you know, there couldn't be a black quarterback. A black man couldn't lead a football team, and I was the leader of the free world. And that to me just was a point I wanted to make directly to the president. And it was very emotional to me. You know, I was emotional when I was writing it. And I just thought to kind of cut under that was to do that moment. You did it, my nigga, you know, like that kind of thing, you know. And my friends who were helping me out loved it from the beginning, but I was concerned about that. I don't know how to say it. They were like, no, Larry, you have to say that. And even up until the last one, I said, I think I'm going to drop that. You are not going to drop that. You have to do that. So they actually kind of, you know, coaxed me into sticking to my initial thoughts on that, you know.
Still, say, had it been such a wild, wild experience.
It was crazy. Out of body is the correct way to explain it. That's exactly what it was. It still seems bizarre and surreal.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe one day that event will return. But how do we get to a point? These are my last two questions, I guess, for you, because I don't want to keep you over time. But how do we get to a point to one where the civil discourse can return to some sense of normalcy? My grandparents, my grandmother was a Democrat. My grandfather's Republican. They didn't even discuss politics until election day, when they would get in the car and say, hey, let's go vote each other. Let's go cancel each other's vote out. That was their inside joke, right? But other than that, they were completely fine, even though they had different political, you know, ideologies and viewpoints on literally everything. But they were married for 60 years. How can we return to that, to where these Thanksgivings aren't as awkward as they have been for the last several years?
That's another good question. It's a tough one because part of it is cultural as well as political. I have friends, and always have, who are on both sides. And I don't mean just casual acquaintances. I mean dear friends, you know. Mm-hmm. And to me, I don't mind disagreeing with somebody. I really don't. You know, it's kind of what makes the friendship interesting, that they have a different point of view. I also don't demonize those people that I know who think that way. I've been criticized for going on different shows. Like, I was on Ben Shapiro's show. You know, he came on my podcast. And I said, look, guys, I disagree with Ben, but I just want to have him on here. He's one of the voices on the right now, and he's talking to a lot of people. I want to have this conversation. But, you know, people, we tend to want to make the person with the opposing view having to be a bad person. And if you think that way, and you honestly think that way, how can you have a conversation with somebody you think is immoral or evil or these things, you know? So a lot of it is in the culture right now. And I think it's not so much politics has to change, is the culture has to change a bit. And some of it is the social media aspect of it, you know, the way it's easy to tear somebody down, and you can pretty much do it anonymously to a certain extent, you know? So we'll see. I mean, part of it may be we may need the right kind of leaders. One of the things I do admire about Joe Biden, not to do a commercial for him, because, you know, I'm not like a surgeon or something, but he does present himself. He's always presented himself in a way that he works with people from both parties, and he gets criticized about that from both sides. I mean, if anything, like, the left probably hates that more than anything right now, you know. But Biden is an old school diplomat. You know, he understands the value of that, you know, and maybe if he presents that in a way, people might start to turn around. It's possible. Like I said, he might get attacked for that as well. Who knows, you know?
So I think you make
if he becomes president,
if he becomes president, of course. Okay, here's my last question. So in Houston, I also work in the world of pro wrestling, right, which I think the world of politics mirrors greatly nowadays. Oh. But I work under a guy named Booker T, who's a world champion wrestler, Hall of Famer, and he has this motto about the people who work under him. He wants everyone to be younger, because he said, I want my roster to be full of young guys, because it's hard for a young person to look at someone my age and aspire to be me. But if they see someone who's only 10 years older, 15, maybe 20 years older, they can aspire to be that. With the candidates we have currently, they're both, either one who gets elected would be the oldest man ever elected president of the United States. How do we motivate young voters to go and support somebody who's in his later 70s and by the end of his first term would be in his 80s, and vice versa, with Trump being in his late 70s at the time? How do you motivate people who cannot resonate or not see themselves in these two guys whatsoever?
Well, I think that happens with leadership. I think another thing that we can help to foster is respect for elder statesmen, you know. I mean, Eisenhower was inspirational to many people. He was the commander of the Allied forces in World War II. And when he was president, you know, young people did look up to him, you know, as that kind of father figure sort of thing. You know, Franklin Roosevelt's the same type of thing. He wasn't a young man, you know, during most of his presidency. But people really looked up to him as that revered figure, you know. And I think if we just learn to revere the office again, you know, and whoever's in it, whether they be older or younger, I think is more of the key. But at the same time, I think it's great to have youthful energy in politics. You know, we're still, the country is still reeling from the loss of John F. Kennedy, like almost 60 years ago, because that youthful energy that he brought to that office was so inspiring for a generation of people. So I think that is important as well. But I'd like to see both of those things happen, you know, that there is that respect for a person that's been there and done that. And at the same time, we can be inspired by the youth. And now Bernie Sanders is an interesting creature because he has both of those things. Most of his movement were like 18 to 24 year olds, probably, you know, which is crazy.
Yeah. I think that you're right about, see, for me, my everyone in my family is always older. My oldest brother's 23 years older than I am. So I was always surrounded by older people and got this diversity of opinion and this wisdom. So I see the benefit of having someone, like you said, who's been there and done that. I just think that when you're 78 or 74 or however old, and you're running for president of the United States and you want to capture the minds of young people, it's hard to compete with Kylie Jenner. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to compete with
them. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, if you seem out of touch and not in touch with your electorate, you know, then that can be a problem. But you're right. And that has to do, once again, with culture, the things that people are going to pay attention to, you know. And that's where the issues become an important thing, too. Like, if someone can really speak to the issues that are important to younger people as well, and vice versa, for younger people to be involved in those issues as well. Both of those, I think, go hand in hand. But I think both parties are saying that we've got to get some more youthful energy in here and get some young people at the top of that ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just very important time to vote. I think registration's passed in Texas, but very important time to vote. And it's very important time to check out Will Moore on the Peacock Network. So I'm going to hit it again.
It's free, you guys. It's free.
Yeah, it's free. I'm an Xfinity user, so I already had Peacock, and I didn't even realize it. So it's if you're Xfinity out there, you have it already. So go check out Larry Will Moore's show. A lot of real cool conversation. Charlamagne the Guy was on there most recently that I was checking out. So thank you so much for joining the show, Larry. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Send me the book.
I'm going to send it to you. And there he was, Larry Wilmore. Really wanted a copy of the book, and I made sure I got one over to him. Really appreciate him coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Wasn't that crazy what he was thinking about Obama? I thought that was so awesome, and he dropped that jewel and that gem exclusively for me. So I had fun with Larry Wilmore. Check out his show again on the Peacock Network. And while you're listening to this show, go check out Back to the Future, the podcast. We're in season 7. Already had a little conversation with Christopher Lloyd. Had a full interview with Bob Gale. We had Peter Rosenberg on in a really fun interview that drops today at the same time you're hearing this with Daniel J. Glenn, where we examine the Back to the Future trilogy. So go check that out. You can also see me on the Reality of Wrestling YouTube channel and on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You can also check me out on the Movie Trivia Schmodown channel, Schmodown Entertainment Network. Follow me on Twitter at Brad Gilmore. We'll be back next week with another show that's not in the realm of politics. I'm going to be talking to the former member of the biggest boy band of all time. Joey Fatone joins me on the podcast from NSYNC. We're going to talk about his new game show that I'm really happy about, really excited for. Watched it, had a lot of fun. So we're going to talk to Joey Fatone next week on the Brad Gilmore Show. And do me on.
Brad, what have you? Brad, what have you done now?
Can I help you?